What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 53. Today we're going to do a little review of the movie called Fat, a Documentary by Vinny Tortorich. Did I get that right?
I think it's Tortorich.
Tortorich? Okay, horrible last name. But yeah, pretty decent movie. It's really about the history of the dietary guidelines and how we got it all wrong, honestly. And if you've listened to this podcast before, it's going to be a lot of the same shit you've heard, because the whole time I was watching this movie, I was like, tell me something I don't know. But we're going to try and go over it, break it down, and give our review. But first, let's check in. So, Tom, how's your week been?
It's been pretty good. So I'm trying a little experiment. I'm trying to not quite eliminate coffee, but cut back on it a lot. I used to drink coffee just when I needed it. But then this last couple years, I've just been drinking it every single morning, kind of regardless if I needed it or not. So, like, I'm trying to figure out if I'm, like, dependent on it or not, like, if I'm addicted to this.
Yeah.
Because, like, all right, obviously, I don't need it every morning. So, I'm trying to just drink it in mornings that I do. So, this last week, I cut it out. I think I had coffee, like, two or three times.
So, you're gauge is just if you wake up tired?
Well, I was just drinking coffee every morning.
I mean, this week.
Yeah. Okay. So, yesterday morning, I was kind of dragging, so I did go out and buy some coffee. I didn't bring any with me. Almost every morning, I would just bring coffee with me, just like the average American does.
Yep.
I did coffee before the podcast, and I'll probably do coffee tomorrow, because usually, like, the Wednesdays are, like, a long day for me. So, like, my Thursday mornings, I'm a little tired. But overall, like, I'm kind of surprised. Like, I've been perfectly fine.
No headaches?
No headaches. No, like, withdrawal symptoms at all. And with my energy being a little bit lower, because I don't have that, like, caffeine burst, I've been doing a lot more, like, movement in the morning to, like, get my blood flowing.
So, like, natural energy.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, hey, you know, I'm a little tired. You know what? Let me just do some bodyweight squats. Let me just do some push-ups real quick. I've been incorporating a lot more of that type of thing. So, I think it's, like, going to be a lot healthier overall.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So, it's been going better than I thought it was.
That's cool.
I thought I was going to be, like, dying without it, but...
Oh, I know I'm 100% addicted, or maybe not addicted, but dependent on caffeine. I don't drink coffee, but I take caffeine pills, and since I train every day, I take my stuff pre-workout, so therefore, I take pre-workout caffeine every day. And the days, on longer days or days I diet, so caffeine does have an effect where it is an appetite suppressant, so if my calories are cut, or if I'm just having, like, a very lean diet, I'll take caffeine midday to kind of cut my appetite, and I'll notice if I do that 3 or 4 days in a row, if I don't take it, like, my second hit in the middle of the day, I get a massive headache. I mean, like, horrible headache. And I'm a baby. Like, I shut down. I cry. Like, it's the worst. Yeah.
Damn. Maybe you should do a little caffeine cut.
I know. I probably should. I won't. You know what I mean? Definitely not. But, yeah, I know I am. It is what it is.
So, what's new with you?
Oh, man. This week's been a little shitty for me, to be honest. So, I feel like I've talked about it a million times, but I have an old back injury. And obviously, you know about it. You're probably sick of hearing about it. But it flared up this week. So I was doing... Well, before this, I've been feeling great. Training's been good. I've upped my calories recently. And, you know, you eat more, get a little heavier, get a little stronger. Everything feels good. And especially for me, I was dieting for so long. Like, it was shitty. So eating more was good for me. Thursday morning, I was training shoulders, feeling good. I was doing just standing barbell military press. And that's just where you press a bar over your head, you know, and got up to doing two plates, which would be like a pretty normal heavy set for me, but I always wear a belt. Like, I swear to God, I sleep in my belt. Like, I always wear a belt when I train, But I was feeling so good, I kind of just got under the bar without a belt. And after I was done, I got about like six or so. I knew my back was feeling it.
Did you know that you did it without a belt?
No, I wasn't even aware. I was just in the moment, and I was like, and I was like, oh fuck, I didn't have my belt on. Because I could feel my back instantly get a little, like it just gets tight. Like it just is a tight feeling. And I was like, damn it. It's like, all right. I finished my workout. Honestly, felt okay. But as the day went on, my back got tighter and tighter. I woke up Friday morning, and my wife told me, she's like, hey, you probably shouldn't work out Friday. Like, just take a day off. And I was like, you know, Friday's arm day. Like, you don't use your back for arms. Like, I'm just going to train my back. It's fine. I mean, I'm training my arms, not a problem. But I was doing overhead, I guess, like, rope extensions for your triceps. And lo and behold, you kind of do use your back for that. It kind of just has a brace. You know, you tighten your core as a brace. And
yeah, you need a lot of stabilization with that exercise.
Yeah, like, you know, yeah, your core to stabilize. So I kind of hurt my back a little bit again on Friday. And after that, I was down for the count. So I didn't go to work on Monday. All weekend, I got my hands on some muscle relaxers. Thank God. Mike, you know who you are. Thank you, bro. Appreciate it. But, and I have a, if people don't know, for like maybe 3 years straight, I took painkillers every day. You know about that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I took Percocet pretty much every day for about 3 years, maybe for like 19 to 22 when my back was really bad. And, am I sitting on a bunch of old Percocets? Sure fucking am. You know what I mean? So I was taking those all weekend. I was knocked out all weekend in bed. Couldn't sleep. Couldn't do anything really because my back was really bad. Like it's been, that was the worst it's been in a real long time. But I turned the corner now. It's been maybe 6 days. So today was my first day doing any sort of exercise. And I did all bodyweight stuff. So I did a little circuit. I did push-ups, pull-ups, and dips. And I just did like 10, 10, and 10. Real easy, real quick. And I did 5 rounds of that. And then 30 minutes on the bike. And that was it. And I felt fine. Like, I'm not hurting anymore. It took me out. Like I was a wreck this weekend.
Yeah, for you to take almost a week off, that must be a pretty bad injury.
Yeah.
Especially knowing like how dedicated you are.
Yeah, addicted.
How obsessed you are with this.
Yes, yeah. For sure. Yeah, it sucked, man. It really did. And it threw me off, like it really did. Some people noticed it, actually. They kind of noticed something was off with me. And
were you just, like, walking different?
I think it was more like a mood thing. Like, yeah. I mean, was I on painkillers? Yeah. So maybe I was just on, like, downers. And but I was just down both, like, mentally from my mood and from the medication.
Oh, I thought you meant, like, you were being, like, a jerk because, like, you were in pain.
No, I think I was being more quiet, more, like, subdued, mellow. Yeah. Yeah, more mellow. And
you're tranquilized, basically?
Yeah, I was pretty much on tranquilizers, yeah. But, so that happened. I didn't take anything the past few days, so I'm off everything, which is good. I'm gonna try and train tomorrow. We'll see how it goes. I think I'll start with the national chest day. You know what I mean? Because I'm bench pressing or something like that.
Yeah, you shouldn't use your back too much for that, especially if everything's going to be on a bench laying down. Mm-hmm. You don't need to stabilize a whole lot.
The hardest part is just going to be picking the plates off the ground and putting them on the bar. We've trained before. I'm sure you remember this when my back's been bad. And you've had to literally like hand me weights.
Yeah, like you'd be on your back at the curl like the dumbbell by the plates, which is not easy to do.
It's hard.
No grip on that.
Yeah.
Instead of just like, oh hey, why don't we just lighten the weight or just like
or use, skip a day
or use bands,
yeah,
something that's like not even heavy
or push-ups.
Yeah,
no, yeah. We're so stupid, god. I don't know. Yeah, at one point in time I was just a dumb gym bro, like believe it or not. So I mean, that's
what do you mean one point in time? Like you still are.
I guess I still
do.
Yeah,
you not just hear your whole story?
I know, I can't. It's in my bones, man. It's in my DNA. Yeah, that's how I heard it initially, just being young and dumb when I was 16, just doing. I don't know if you were with me when I hurt my back. Were you?
I don't think so.
I think I was by myself and I did it. So that was my week, man. It sucked, but I was able to squeeze. Since I didn't do shit, like I had so much free time, even though I was just laying in bed, I was able to watch this movie, which is called Fat, a documentary. Honestly, just chilling in bed. You know what I mean? I had nothing but time. So what did you think about it overall?
I like what the topics were. I like the cast of it. I just think they tried to do a little too much with the time. They either should have made it like a 4-part series and extended it out for another 3 hours or 4 more hours, or just kind of cut back on the topics.
Well, I guess I should back up first. I should say this, we knew about this movie because in our little circle, this is going to be like a pro pro low carb, pro keto, pro high fat diet movie.
Yeah, definitely. And especially like pro natural foods, that type of thing. It's not just about low carb. It's about getting just real natural ancestral type foods in your diet.
Yeah, like if vegans and vegetarians have those like idiot ass films, What the Health or Forks Over Knives, which are complete trash, do not listen to anything they say. But if they have those movies, then someone like me and you, we have a movie like this. And this is a real documentary. This isn't some bullshit film.
No, it was good. I just think they either should have made it longer. They probably have a lot of good material that they cut out of it for time length.
Yeah.
Or they should have just not touched on so many topics. But I don't know. Like, I'm a little biased because, like you said in the intro, you already knew everything.
Yep.
I already knew everything, too. So maybe this was convincing for somebody that was hearing this for the first time. I just think if they went into more depth and, like, broke down more science, it would have been a lot more convincing.
Did Kaylee, your girlfriend, or your fiancé watch it?
She watched it with me. Again, most of the stuff, like, she already knew before. Some of the stuff, like, I've talked to her about, and she probably just tuned me out.
Okay.
Because the whole Ansel Keys part came up, and she's like, I know that guy. Like, you hate him, right?
You sure do.
And I was like, yeah, fuck that guy.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
And then they were just kind of breaking down, like, his seven-country study.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, just listen to this part, and this is why I hate him. And they just talked about how he cherry-picked his information from the... He studied 22 countries, not seven, and he cherry-picked his information to fit his hypothesis, and that set up the whole diet-hard hypothesis and what we think about saturated fat, cholesterol, and heart disease, and connected all those dots, which should not be connected.
No, the connection was never there.
Yeah, so, like, there was just that part that she heard me, like, rant about a bunch of times, which she probably tunes me out.
Okay.
So, like, that was something that she kind of learned about.
Yeah, I wanted my wife to watch it, but she wasn't down for it. She didn't care to watch it. And because, like you said, when I watched it, I was honestly bored. Not that I didn't like the film. I did. I thought it did provide good information. But I was just like, yo, like I said, tell me something I don't know. It felt like I read a book for the 11th time.
Well, we're both pretty big nerds when it comes to this stuff. So we're looking for, where's the science? Where's, like, this study?
Yeah, little details.
Yeah, we were looking for that, and they didn't really touch on it. But I get it, because, like, this wasn't for us.
It wasn't, no.
If it was...
I was hoping it was, though.
Yeah. If it was for us, it would have been a lot nerdier. It would have been a lot more boring. It wouldn't have been boring to us, but it would have been boring to, like, the 98% of other people that have been watching.
Gonna watch it, yeah, exactly.
So, like, I understood where they went that way.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So it started off with this child named Charlie. He had seizures, and they gave him... he had a brain surgery. No solution. They put him on all these different types of drugs. Didn't solve his problem. He still had seizures all the time.
Yeah, we're talking multiple seizures a day. Like, so many seizures, he was never going to be a functioning adult, functioning human.
No, so eventually his dad got tired of it, and he did his own research. So he's at Johns Hopkins Hospital, which is, I don't know if it's the biggest hospital in America, but it's
damn, it's up there.
It's up there. So he went to their library, started studying on epilepsy, came across this information that's like 100 years old about the ketogenic diet. And so he put his son on the ketogenic diet. 2 days later, no more seizures.
Boom, just cured.
Yeah. And then he also found out while he was looking into this, so a ketogenic diet cures 1/3 of epilepsy patients. 1/3. Another third see significant impairment. So that's 2/3 that would get great benefits from being on a ketogenic diet, and the other third was no effect.
Yeah.
So I don't know exactly what the details of this study were to see, like, why some, like, 2/3 got improvements and 1/3 didn't. Maybe, like, they weren't on it long enough, or they weren't doing it right.
Yeah, certain fats were wrong. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, it is kind of hard to do a ketogenic diet right. Like, you need some time to get used to it.
Yeah, you can eat a bunch of soy oil and say you're on a ketogenic diet.
Yeah, and then also, especially when it comes to epilepsy, if you are eating just like one big ass meal a day, you are going to get a little bit of a blood sugar spike from eating all that protein in one meal, which isn't a big deal for 99% of people.
Most people.
But for this particular population, it is a big deal because, like, it's those blood sugar spikes that cause seizures.
Yep.
So yeah, like, if that could have been an issue, like, I don't really know. But it's just kind of crazy. Like, so this father had to do it. Then he went to his doctors and, like, well, why didn't you tell me about this?
Like, top doctors in the nation.
Yeah, like, I've been coming in here forever right now. Like, we were trying all these different medicines, trying all these procedures.
My son's pretty much dying.
Yeah, and the doctor's response was, well, we still have more drugs to try, and we still have more other options. Like, that was, like, our last resort. And I was like, wait, there are no side effects to a ketogenic diet.
And we're talking a 66% success rate.
No drug comes close to that.
No.
No drug. And drugs have serious side effects. Mm-hmm. So it was just kind of, like, baffling. Like, the dad was just, like, in shock. Like, why wasn't I told? And maybe, you know what, the doctor didn't know.
Probably not. He's not taught this stuff.
Yeah. And that just kind of brought something to my attention. A couple years ago, some girl that I went to college with, I saw on Facebook that she was having seizures. And she's just, like, constantly going in and out of the hospital dealing with different things. So I just reached out to her and I was like, oh, hey, have you heard of the ketogenic diet? She's like, yeah, I have. I brought it up with my doctor. And he said that that only works for children.
Oh, fuck. Why are doctors idiots?
Okay, so let's just break that down. So at what age would a ketogenic diet stop working? At age 12, 13, 7, yeah. 14, 15, mm-hmm. 16, 17? Like, all of a sudden there's this one day, sorry, you are no longer a child. This diet is no longer going to be effective. And then do you also think that the children that they put on the ketogenic diet, like, once they did hit 16 or hit
puberty, they stopped working?
They went off the diet that's what they've been living off of and they've been seeing such great success with? Mm-hmm. That makes no logical sense.
None.
I'm just guessing they probably haven't been able to test it on adults. Because if you have seizures like that, like, you kind of need to deal with it when you're a child.
For sure. So you won't make it to an adult.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. It's just like, yeah, that's why all the studies are on children, because they need to figure that out right away or they're not going to make it. That just, like, upset me so much. I sent her a bunch of information. I should probably do a follow-up with her to see how she's doing. Yeah, you should. But she was just kind of like, yeah, my doctor didn't say it. Didn't really seem... There was, like, no real back and forth with it. So I was like, okay, well...
That's like with me when I talked to that guy about cancer. And his oncologist said their food has no effect on cancer. It blows our minds.
Yeah. But that does... Dr. Drew Pinsky was in this. And I don't really know why he was in it other than he's a really famous name.
Dr. Drew.
Yeah. You might know him from Loveline. He also does a podcast with Adam Carolla. He's probably one of, like, the most recognizable doctors in our country.
As far as, like, addiction goes, he's the addiction guy. Like, if a celebrity's on a bunch of coke, like, he helps them.
Yeah, he's all over TV and stuff like that. He had one great line somewhere in it. He's like, they asked him, how many years of nutritional training did you get? And he's like, let me think, residency, zero.
Zero, none. And guess what? That's the majority of doctors out there.
Yeah, like, if you do learn anything on nutrition... It's not because you were forced to, it's because you wanted to and you did it on your own.
Yep.
And whatever nutrition studies or whatever nutrition learning that you did get in college, it's probably going to be wrong because mine was.
Yeah, so was mine.
Yeah.
Yeah, and especially think in medical school, they're going to push. I mean, I'm not to downplay medical school at all, right? Like, I assume it's hard. You know what I mean? Even though half of the dudes I know who went to medical school cheated on me to get into medical school, so I'm not impressed by you. But, they're obviously trying to memorize drugs and drug interactions and, like, pathways with that type of shit. Guess what? You can't patent food. No one's making money off food. Food's not going to be in these textbooks, you know?
Yeah. And honestly, like, it would take away a lot of that schooling.
Oh, yeah, for sure it would.
If you just took, like, 1 year of nutrition, you could probably figure out a lot of this stuff. I mean, we figured out a lot.
Yeah, autoimmune, what do you call it? Epilepsy, for sure. Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of... I'm just kind of glad that this very popular doctor just kind of brought that to everybody's attention. We received no education in nutrition, yet your primary care physician will give you dietary advice.
And they're the authority.
Yeah. Even if, no matter how overweight they are.
Oh, yeah.
They'll still give you dietary advice.
Yep.
Eat less, move more, which doesn't work.
Yeah. Good luck, bro.
So they just kind of brought it back to how our guidelines just started off. And that was with Ellen White back in the 1860s. We talked about that in which podcast was it?
It was episode 9.
Yeah, so this is all based off of Gary Fetke's and his wife's, their research. Gary Fetke got under attack because was he dealing with diabetes specifically? I know he's a surgeon.
I'm not sure.
So he was doing amputations with his patients.
Yeah, he just saw that everywhere, he was cutting off everyone's toes and then their feet and then their knees, so...
Yeah. He got tired of doing that, mm-hmm. So he just kind of, like, looked into, like, oh, hey, they should stop drinking soda. And then he also got sick of being in the hospital, that they would give him Jell-O, ice cream, all these other crappy
orange food. Juice every morning.
Yeah, and he's just like, stop giving my diabetic patients sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is making them so much worse. The dietitians attacked him, and I'm not taking that out of line. Like, that's exactly what they did. They attacked him. They said, you have no right giving any sort of dietary advice, no nutrition advice. He had to battle it. Luckily, he won, because, like, just looking at it from a outside perspective, you look at it logically, he was right on every single thing he was talking about.
Yeah, the entire time he was right.
And it's like, of course, like, Jell-O is not a health food. We should not be having that in hospitals. Like,
sure not.
Yeah. So he just kind of goes into that. And that's where all this Ellen White research came from and the history of our guidelines. So she got these ideas from, like, her dreams. God spoke to her and told her, do not eat anything with a face. Also, don't consume anything that's going to stimulate your brain, like coffee or tea. That's 180% the opposite of what we do.
Literally.
We only eat things with a face, and we were just talking about how we're addicted to caffeine.
Exactly. And we're thriving, man. We ain't dying. That's
right. Oh, I'm in the best shape of my life.
Yeah,
like, seriously. That's not even close.
Yeah.
So, like, that's just kind of where that came from. And then John Kellogg really took it to the next level. He was a writer for the Seventh-day Adventist Church. That's the church that Ellen White was a member of. And he just kind of spread all her messages, all her visions out to the world.
Yeah, Ellen White is like the Jesus of the Seventh-day Adventist, like modern Jesus, like the prophet.
Yeah, so what did John Kellogg do? Everybody knows that name, Kellogg. Kellogg cereal.
100%. They started the whole, I want to call it like the grain cartels. Like, they're behind the why you think cereals has like part of a healthy breakfast.
Yeah, it's crazy. So cornflakes was invented as a cure to masturbation. All up there with graham crackers, that was also a cure. And the reason that it was a cure is because it lowers your libido. So they were all about getting rid of your primal instincts, the stuff that makes us human, by getting the foods that make us human out of our diet. So don't eat meat, eat these grains. And
yeah.
Then Kellogg's also took advantage of this and had cereal companies, which are all grains. So they made a ton of money. Ellen White moved out to Australia and started her own, like, cereal company that was a part of the church. So they don't pay taxes on their revenue.
Nope.
Just think of how big Kellogg's is. There's an equally big company in Australia that doesn't pay taxes.
Crazy.
Crazy. So, like, they made so much money off of this. Just this girl's dreams.
Yeah, and to this day, they still do.
Oh, it's insane. So, talking about the opposite of the Kellogg and Ellen White diet, just an all-meat diet. So, that's where Stephenson comes into play.
Yeah, so something I want to talk about, and what I thought about when this came up, I was really surprised that they talked about Stephenson in this whole documentary, because, like, I know about him, you know about him, but does the general public know that guy?
Oh, not really. Like, there's barely any information. And the first time I even heard of him was when we had Travis Statham on our podcast. Mm-hmm. I don't know, was that like 6 months ago? It was a while ago.
It was a while.
When he brought him up.
Yep. So I read his book. It's called The Fat of the Land. And Stephenson was an Arctic explorer. And he lived with the Inuit for over a decade. And he realized that these people were healthy as shit. Never got sick, no diseases, no one was dying of cancer, no one was like skinny and lethargic, anything like that. And all they ate was animal products. All they ate was meat. Depending on the season, it would be either a bunch of seal or a bunch of reindeer, right? That was about it. And so he came back to America and he was like, yo, we got this shit wrong. He's like, these people up there, they're not sick, they're healthy as shit, all they eat is meat. And people in America were like, you're crazy. If you want to like show this is what's really gone, prove it. Stay in this hospital for an entire year. It was actually him and his partner. And we're going to feed you meat. And we'll track your health. You know, all the markers we can use to track health, we'll track. And exactly what they did. And after a year, he was healthier when he left than when he came in. He proved that all meat diet was extremely healthy.
And he wasn't like a pro-meat zealot going into this. When he first went up to the Arctic, he's like, what am I going to eat? I'm going to die up here.
Yep, he's like, there's nothing green.
Yeah, exactly. There's nothing up there for me to eat. Like, he thought he was going to die. And then he got super healthy while he was there, the healthiest he's ever been. And when they did do that study in the hospital, like, he did get sick at the beginning.
Yeah, they messed up initially. Because initially, they fed him all lean cuts of meat. So think like a sirloin, or maybe like even like a chicken breast, right? Because apparently that's quote unquote healthy. But if you pair fat with just protein, not enough fat on it, that's not healthy and that's not sustainable. You need a fuel source for that fat to be metabolized. So you need the fat for fuel and the protein for the structure and enzymes of our bodies. You can't just eat a lean protein and be healthy.
Yeah, a calorie isn't a calorie. That is one of the biggest myths out there. Protein isn't supposed to be used for energy. It's supposed to be used for building blocks. It's basically just like materials for our body to use.
Yep.
Yeah, some of it does get used as energy.
Like, it can.
Yeah. Through gluconeogenesis, it gets converted into sugar. But that's only like a demand-driven process, and that's a very small amount of it. It's not like all of it's getting converted into sugar. There's so many other uses.
Yep.
So yeah, like that whole 4 calories with protein really isn't true.
No.
I don't really know how we should measure it, because it's going to vary meal to meal depending on your needs. But yeah, like the whole calories in, calorie out model doesn't make any sense when you like factor in all that stuff with protein.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't. But I'm glad, like I said, I'm glad this movie brought it up, and I'm glad, like, it wasn't, this movie's not like a pro carnivore diet or anything, but it did just show that these studies have been done on an all-meat diet, and Stephenson is, like, the original OG carnivore before he even knew what the carnivore diet was, and they showed that it's really healthy, and I don't know, I thought it was cool that they talked about it.
Yeah, and hopefully that'll, like, spark somebody's interest so they can take a deeper dive into it.
Hope so.
That's what I hope, like, because they do touch on a lot of subjects on here, on this documentary. So hopefully, like, it does spark a lot of people's interest. Like, oh, hey, that Stephenson guy? Let me look into this.
Mm-hmm.
So the next thing that they do talk about in that documentary are heart-healthy grains. You see that on Cheerios. You see that on oatmeal.
The heart-healthy sticker.
Yeah, you see that on everything. By the way, if you see heart-healthy in the grocery store, run away. Don't eat it. Do not buy it.
Mm-mm.
So the reason that those things are considered to be heart-healthy is they compare whole grains to white flour.
A.K.A. sugar.
Yeah, white flour gets converted into sugar super fast. White flour is not a health food. So if you compare anything to white flour, it's going to appear healthy.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's like if you compare... I love this example that they gave in the documentary. Filtered cigarettes are healthier than unfiltered cigarettes. That does not mean that filtered cigarettes are good for you.
Yep.
That's basically what they did.
Exactly.
And it's like that's just backwards logic.
You know how many, I swear to God, how many people come up to me all the time and like talk, oh, I had oatmeal for breakfast, and they expect me to like pat them on the back, good job, bro, stick to your diet. And I'm like, why? Yeah. Like, why would you eat that?
No, that's my example. I say the same thing.
Yeah.
And it's honestly like, it doesn't taste good unless you add a shit ton of sugar to it.
Yeah, and you boil the grains for like 20 minutes. Like, you have to process the shit out of that just to make it edible.
Yeah. I mean, I used to do that when I thought it was healthy.
Shit, so did I. I know.
So the next one that they talked about, which I wish they would have went into so much more detail, was the Otto Warburg.
Yep.
Like, I mean, we could talk about this guy for hours, for days.
I'm a big fan of Otto Warburg.
Oh, so am I. And honestly, so Otto Warburg discovered the Warburg effect, and that's that the mitochondria of a cancer cell gets damaged and can no longer go through electron transport chain.
Yep.
And convert energy. So they can only use fermentation. Cancer cells can only ferment.
Yep.
Which basically breaks it down into, instead of being able to convert one glucose into like 30 ATP,
mm-hmm.
it's like one down to two.
Yep. Super inefficient, super shitty, not a good way to produce energy at all.
So they discovered that. And honestly, I think the reason that we didn't continue his research is because he was German. And like, basically after World War II, that's when we kind of, like, stopped listening to this guy, is because, like, everybody was, the entire world was anti-Germany.
Oh, and yeah.
I think that had to do a lot with it. It's like...
Oh, people don't know. I mean, Gary Taubes talked about this a little bit in Good Calorie, Bad Calorie, but World War II, I mean, we're fairly young now. World War II really didn't mean shit to us.
No.
We weren't alive. Whatever. Hitler sucks, sure. Okay, yeah, I'm down with that, you know? But it's not like I really know anything about World War II, but... World War II affects all of us to this day from a dietary standpoint because, like, Otto Warburg, German guy, he figured out cancer literally almost 100 years ago, right? And the Germans and other European countries, they had this diet shit figured out 100 years ago. I'm sure if you listen to this podcast before, you know I love pulling up studies. Half the studies I pull are from the 30s, the 40s, the 50s. This shit's not new information. that carbohydrates are bad, or excessive carbohydrates are bad, chronically elevated insulin is bad, fat is a healthy fuel source, protein is healthy. All this shit was known before World War II. But Hitler fucked around one day and decided to kill everybody. You know what I mean? And he kind of had to reset history. So we have to relearn all this shit that we knew pre-World War II. All the documents were lost. A lot of the scientists were killed. And like you said, like almost a racism came into play where all of a sudden America was the shit. So now we're only listening to the Americans. Well, guess what? The Americans didn't have shit figured out from a dietary standpoint. We were dumb as shit.
Yeah. Oh, and we just didn't, we didn't value health at that time. Because no. People weren't, we didn't see the epidemics that we see now.
Yeah, it's true.
Like if we had the current like obesity epidemic back then, diabetes, all that stuff was like prevalent back then, we probably would have valued scientists like Otto Warburg and would have wanted to take them over here.
Like, well, because we didn't appreciate our health back then because everyone was fairly healthy.
Yeah, exactly. And that's pretty much the turning point of when our health started going to shit. So it started with like kind of the Great Depression when people were just more worried about just eating in general than what they were eating. Because, hey, food was scarce.
Yeah, bro, either you eat or you starve. Guess what? If I'm starving, I'll have some white bread.
Yeah. And when you're hungry, you gotta eat.
Yep.
Like, you know, it doesn't really matter what it is. And then with World War II, now we're doing rationing because we have this big war effort that we gotta feed all our troops overseas. We gotta feed the Europeans that are over there too. So, like, now we're doing all this rationing and stuff.
We don't have a choice what we get. You get what you get.
And then after that's done, we have this big industry set up to creating cheap foods, then why are they going to stop?
Exactly. Very true.
And so, like, the first time that people really started caring about their health happened with Eisenhower in 1955. So he has a heart attack while he's president. And then everybody now became deathly afraid of heart disease. This is the first time people started caring about, oh, hey, what I eat impacts my life.
Yep.
Not to mention that Eisenhower smoked about 4 packs of cigarettes a day.
No, it was the cholesterol, bro. It wasn't the cigarettes.
Yeah, it was all about his diet. It had nothing to do with what he was inhaling on a daily basis.
Yeah, and I think it's I think another good point, like today, I mean, maybe I'm not a political guy, you know, I don't think you really are either, but like what Trump does, if Trump's talking on TV, I don't really give a shit. You know what I'm saying? I got books free, I'm lifting weights. You know what I'm saying? But in 1955, if the president was on the radio, shit stopped. You know what I'm saying? People really cared. So when Eisenhower dropped dead almost from a heart attack, everyone listened. And he was put on a quote-unquote prudent diet. Low fat, low cholesterol. That's what you got put on.
Yeah, so that here comes Ansel Keys.
That bitch.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, is he like our biggest enemy?
Oh, he has to be. Yeah, he killed more people than Hitler, I'll tell you that much.
Honestly, like, if you wanted to, like, estimate how many people died because of his horrible advice, I mean, it's probably in the millions.
It has to be.
There's no way you can, like, actually calculate it, but it's so high. It's at least in the hundreds of thousands.
Yeah.
So he did his whole 7-country study, which we talked about a million times, and he's basically just trying to prove his own hypothesis right.
Because he went into this study knowing cholesterol was to blame for heart attacks.
Dietary, specifically saturated fat, raises your cholesterol, which clogs your arteries and gives you a heart attack.
Now, mind you, if you're just listening to this over, like, you know, you're washing your dishes, you're driving some shit, what he just said is not true, but that's what Ansel Keys thought.
So that's his hypothesis going in. He studies 22 countries. He finds the 7 countries that fit his data, publishes those, and discards the other 15.
Yeah, because with these 7 countries, he can draw a straight line from consumption of fat and rates of heart disease. And I hate even calling it a study because it's not. I hate even calling it data because it's not. It's like, that is super generous. It was a shit data. It was a shit study from head to toe. But people just bought it hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah, there's no credible data proving that right. And we've been trying for years. We've been trying for like the last 50, 60 years to prove that hypothesis right. And the only way you can do it is the way he did it. And that's discard 2/3 of your data.
Yep.
Exactly. You just can't do it.
No, you can't do it.
So Dave Feldman kind of just kind of goes into this a little bit. So like dietary cholesterol has no impact on our cholesterol and our blood.
And by the way, Dave Feldman, if you don't know, is like literally the expert on cholesterol nowadays. You can Google him. He has a website called The Cholesterol Code, which I love. I've done some deep dives on that website. It's crazy how much information he knows. But he knows literally a million times more shit about cholesterol than Ansel Keys ever did.
Yeah, like Dave Feldman and Ivor Cummings, both of them are in this documentary. When I want to know something about heart disease and cholesterol, that's who I go to.
That's where you go.
Yeah. So the more cholesterol we eat, the less our body makes. The less cholesterol we eat, the more our body makes. So dietary cholesterol has no impact on our body's own cholesterol.
No, there's negative feedback loops and positive feedback loops to keep our cholesterol fairly consistent.
So that whole hypothesis was just so wrong and so stupid. Yet that's where the whole low-fat movement emerged from.
Yeah, the quote-unquote prudent diet. That's what it stemmed from.
So Ansel Keys didn't just like burst onto the scene and have like no opposition. There was somebody that you respect and you've read his book, Dr. John Yudkin. Do you want to go into that a little bit?
Yeah, I love John Yudkin, man. I real feel bad for that guy. So he wrote a book called Pure, White, and Deadly. And I've read that book too. It's actually a trip watching this movie. I don't know how many experts they had on there. Maybe like 15 or something like
that.
They
had a lot.
They had a lot, right? I knew every single one. And if one of them had a book published fairly recently, I read it. And I was actually kind of proud of myself. I was like, oh, I read that. Boom, boom, boom. Like, I knew everything. But Pure, White, and Deadly is John Yudkin's book. And he actually published this right around the same time Ansel Keys published his quote-unquote information on cholesterol. And John Yudkin proved...
It's a clear connection that if he looked at Keys' data and compared all 22 countries and drew a straight line with all 22 countries' data with sugar, not saturated
yes.
fat.
Yeah, he proved that it was the sugar intake of these countries really causing the heart disease. It was not the fat. And John Yudkin had so much more data backing up his claims. He had so much more literal studies that he conducted himself. He was a super smart guy. But the problem was he was kind of a timid guy. He was from, I think, Britain. And he was honestly just too proper and too nice. And Ansel Keys ate his ass up.
Yeah, Ansel Keys was pissed that somebody...
like, challenged him.
Challenged him. So he basically just bullied Yudkin, called him a quack, and just did a complete smear campaign. And unless you're a scientist and you can actually like look at the data, like you're not going to be able to know.
No, it turned into a popularity contest and Ansel Keys won.
Yeah, and everybody was so obsessed with finding a cure because of the whole President Eisenhower thing that we needed an answer. It didn't need to be the right answer. We just needed an answer at that time.
Yep.
And unfortunately, no matter how much data comes out showing that that information is wrong, we just kept it going.
I know. And honestly, like, the John Yudkin story doesn't end well. It's not like, you know, when he was 85, like, the stories turned and, you know, he was like, hey, sorry, bro. Sorry we didn't listen to you. No, when he died, people were still like, oh, John Yudkin's crazy. Like, the story never went well for him.
I know. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, it really is sad. So buy his book. I don't know who gets the money from it. Just buy it. It's
hopefully
like $5.
Family or somebody.
Hopefully, yeah.
So one story that they did bring up. So similar to the Charlie story, they bring in another family that has a young child that has diabetes. So,
and this is actually pretty powerful. You can tell the parents give the story and they're like damn near crying the whole time.
Yeah, this was very touching. Like this was, I thought, the best part of the documentary.
Me too.
So the family does everything that they possibly can according to the guidelines, according to the American Diabetes Association guidelines. So they measure glucose, they weigh all the food, they measure all the food. They measure the insulin. They know exactly how much insulin they're supposed to give after each meal. They buy a continuous glucose monitor. So they're always able to know what the blood glucose is of their child. And what happens is their child gets so much worse. Oh, they even buy a diabetes dog that's able to like sniff out and detect if they're going to have like low blood sugar.
Really?
It's crazy how, I don't know, skilled or...
just committed these parents were.
Yeah, and just like these, the crazy ability of dogs.
Oh, for sure.
They can detect seizures, they can detect you if you have low blood sugar.
That's funny. I mean, like I said before, I watched this movie and I got kind of bored. I must have totally skipped that part. Totally did not even see the part about the dog.
They mentioned it briefly.
Oh, okay.
She's just kind of like rat-a-tat-tatting, did insulin, glucose.
Like what she did.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or even bought a dog. It was just kind of like just mentioned in passing. So their child gets so much worse. So luckily they lived around, they live like nowadays, so they have the internet. They're just asking around on different social media, like, hey, what works? So somebody recommends like, hey, you should try a low carb diet. They've tried everything else. Their child's just getting so much worse. So like, hey, why not? They're just like at their wit's end. They don't know what else to do. So they do try the low carb diet. Guess what happens? Child gets so much healthier, stable blood glucose all the time. which is your goal if you're diabetic. Like, that's what you want, is stable blood glucose. That's like, that's your main mission with that. And so the parents are super happy. They go see their endocrinologist.
Thinking they're going to get, like, pat on the back, good job.
Yeah, they're so happy walking in that door. And they get the worst reaction possible. The doctor's like, that's not sustainable. You're harming your child both physically and emotionally. Like, your child needs to eat birthday cake. Your child, you're depriving your kid of so many just, like, life experience by doing this. Like, why would you do this? And, like, hey, you need to go see a therapist.
Like, maybe something's wrong with you and you're reflecting it on your child.
That is the I'm not a parent, but, like, that seemed like the worst thing you could ever say to a parent.
Yeah, that'd make you want to kill a bitch.
Like, I wanted to punch that doctor in the face, and that wasn't even talking to me. Me too. Like, I was so upset by that.
Yeah, so was I.
Oh, man, that's just, like, the absolute worst thing, and it's just...
And mind you, like, when we go to... I mean, I don't even go to doctors anymore, but if a doctor told me something, I would take everything with a grain of salt, and most likely, I'd be able to pick it apart. You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't look at them like the experts anymore. But these people, they do. The Diabetic Association, they're supposed to know everything about diabetes. They're supposed to know the meds, the food, the everything. And they're telling them they're wrong. Like, it makes some parents second guess themselves.
I know, and it's horrible. And I'd like to just say this endocrinologist just, you know, hey, they were taught the wrong stuff, so they're going to preach the wrong stuff. But to have that reaction to a parent is just horrible. Yeah. And we hear this stuff all the time from people. This isn't, like, the very first time I've heard this story. Like, I hear it all the time from other people. When we interviewed Mike, Mike was documenting everything that he was doing with his diabetes. And the doctor's just, like, looked it over, like, yeah, you're lying.
Yep.
Or you must not be doing it right. Mm-hmm. You're miscalculating something.
Yeah, it's not our fault. It's not my recommendation that's wrong. You're not doing it right.
Yeah, like, you're blaming the patient for your shitty advice.
Yep.
Like, that's, listen to your patients out there. Nobody knows 100% of everything. So if you see something that works, maybe you should take a closer look.
Yeah, go down the rabbit hole, see what they're doing. Maybe you can learn something.
Yeah. So yeah, that was, I thought, the best part of the documentary.
Yeah, showing that low carb is the effective method to treat diabetes, type 1 and type 2.
Yeah, it got an emotional response out of me and everything. So that was a really good, touching story. Then it kind of goes into statins, which pop onto the scene about in the 80s and the 90s. Nowadays, shit, everybody's in a statin.
Oh, everybody.
If you walk into a room with 10 people, I guarantee you one of them's going to be on a statin.
Yep. Yeah, they want to put statins in our water. Seriously.
I know, that drives me crazy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's not even just...
And that's not even a joke, by the way.
Oh, no, it's not. It's kind of, it's pretty scary. And it's not even just like an adult thing. Like, oh, hey, if you're over 50, your cholesterol rises, which it does naturally. So, of course, everybody that's over 50 is going to be on a statin.
Yep.
They also are putting like children that are like 6 years old on statin drugs. Like, there's so many side effects to these drugs. Like, it's insane.
You know, here's a little tidbit on statins. This doesn't have to do with the movie, but statins work on an enzyme called HMG-CoA reductase. And that's kind of making cholesterol in our body is actually super complicated. I think it's like 14-something reactions. But that's where statins work in, right? They're a competitive agonist. I think it's a term for it. So they kind of stop that reaction from happening. Well, that enzyme has two ways to kind of upregulate or downregulate, right? Insulin is released when we eat carbohydrates, right?
Yes.
Okay, so if you don't know that, insulin is released when we eat carbs. It helps our blood kind of, I mean, it helps our cells kind of soak up more glucose. What do you think insulin does on that enzyme? It upregulates HMG-CoA reductase. So insulin will actually increase our body's rate of making cholesterol. By the way, glucagon decreases it. By the way, so a low carb diet would be a great way to help our body produce less cholesterol. And doctor ain't gonna tell you that though. It is what it is. You know what I mean?
And that same pathway, what was the
HMG-CoA reductase?
Isn't that by shutting that down or inhibiting that?
Uh-huh.
Doesn't that inhibit our body's ability to create CoQ10?
Sure does.
And I don't know if you know this or not, but CoQ10 is essential for your heart health. It's essential for pretty much every organ in our body.
Yep.
But most importantly, for something that needs to beat all the damn time, like our heart.
Exactly. An organ that when that shuts down, guess what? You're dead. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
And lowering LDL isn't really a good thing. LDL isn't cholesterol. It's a low-density lipoprotein.
Yep.
Cholesterol is not in that title. It's a carrier of cholesterol, but that's not all it carries.
Nope.
So it transports other things around our body, too. So you're basically just, hey, we need less trucks on the road. You know what happens if you have less trucks on the road? You're going to have less CoQ10 getting delivered to parts of the body. You're having all these other, like, little micronutrients that are not going to be delivered to cells of your body that they need.
Yeah, and just less. Also, they carry triglycerides as well. And we talked about before with the Warburg effect, when your mitochondria become dysfunctional, they rely on glucose for fuel. Well, guess what our body likes to use for fuel? Fat, aka triglycerides. So we have LDL carrying triglycerides around. When we lower that, we have less triglycerides. Guess what some of our cells are going to be forced to do? Rely on sugar. Wonder what's going to happen with that. Maybe cancer rates will go up. What happens when people are on statins?
Oh, yeah.
Does cancer rate go up? Sure fucking do, you know? These are all side notes, by the way, but it is what it is, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to talk about statins without going into more detail, because it's something that we're both really passionate about.
Yeah.
So statins, they lower your cholesterol. They do decrease your chance of having heart disease, but they don't make you live longer. So no. Your overall mortality, all-cause mortality, does not change. It does not go down. So why would you take a drug that's supposed to save your life that doesn't improve your life?
And has side effects.
Serious side effects. Most people stop taking it because, like, they feel dementia.
Yep. Or muscle pains.
Yeah. Like, those are low energy. Like, those are, like, the main ones that they feel. Like, hey, I can't remember what I did yesterday. Like, that's pretty scary for most people.
Yeah, you're 45 and you can't remember where you put your keys. That's a problem.
Yeah, so, like, that's what most people go off of it for. But there's a lot of other side effects, too. Erectile dysfunction is another big one.
Yep.
Which, of course, they want that to happen because
they have also a solution.
Yep.
What's that solution called?
That'd be Viagra.
Oh, okay. Yep. And they sell that, too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's our little rant on statins.
Yeah.
So, like, the next thing that they go over is food labels. And this was kind of eye-opening to me. I mean, I wasn't surprised by it. I just didn't know it. That there's over 70 names for sugar on food labels to just deceive consumers.
Yeah, I didn't know it was that high.
I mean, it wasn't surprising.
No.
I mean, pretty much anything that ends in O-S-E is going to be sugar. Or anything that ends in syrup is going to be sugar. So, like, you might look at the bottom or the back of, like, a protein bar. The first ingredient is, like, oat syrup or something like that. Or agave syrup. That's sugar.
Yep.
And then the next one might be honey. Sugar. And then cane sugar. So, like, the first three ingredients are all sugar.
I hate the honey one, by the way. Honey gets off for being kind of, if you're, like, kind of like a hippie, whatever, you know, you want to be health guy, honey gets a pass. But your honey and that protein bar you're talking about is just sugar, bro. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's not, you're not talking about some natural local bees you caught yourself. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so that's just a way that the food industry is just trying to cover their tracks and not get you, just kind of confuse the consumer.
Yeah, because if the first three ingredients said what it was, sugar, 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 even an idiot would be like, maybe that's not good for me.
Yeah. Like, oh, hey, this healthy protein bar is just like this can of soda.
Yep.
So, like, that's why they kind of do that. I think that pretty much breaks down everything. Did you have anything else you wanted to talk about?
Well, I mean, the one thing I learned from this movie, I mean, I guess that sugar has a million names. I kind of knew that, but I didn't know it was over 70. But they talked about the McGovern Committee, and we've talked about this as well. I probably in the history of the dietary guidelines, maybe, I'm not sure. But in 1968, that's when the McGovern Committee was created. And I always thought the main goal of the committee was to set the, like, dietary guidelines for the country. I just thought that's what it was, because that was the end result of the committee. But the committee initially was established to fight the hunger epidemic in America. So apparently back in the 60s, 10 million Americans were going hungry. And they were like, this is a huge epidemic. We need to get food to these people. It wasn't about nutrition. It wasn't about, hey, telling people eat this amount of salt, this amount of sugar, this amount of fat. It wasn't even about that. It was about finding ways to get food to people. But that dude McGovern, he ran for president. He lost. And the whole thing was just a political agenda to gain popularity and to be elected president. And the end result was just the shittiest recommendations ever, telling us to eat less meat, eat less fat, eat more vegetables, eat more heart-healthy grains every day. And honestly, one of the quotes from this guy was, we don't have time to wait for hard scientific proof. We need an answer now. Guess what, bro? We couldn't wait, and now we're paying the price. Everything is up. Obesity is up. Diabetes is up. Dementia is up. But all of these diseases of Western civilizations are on the rise because of the recommendations from that committee. So I learned that from the movie.
Yeah, and they weren't based off of any science, like you said, and yet we keep doubling down on those recommendations.
Yeah, like they were right in the first time. It's like, no, they were guessing.
Yeah, and like every time that we create new guidelines, there's hope out there that we're going to change, but no, we just go further and further down that road.
Yep.
I know Canada, just on their guidelines, took meat off of their guidelines and just replaced it with protein. So they're not even recommending that Canadians eat meat anymore. Our guidelines are still under review, right?
I don't know.
I believe 2020 is when the new ones they're are going to come out. And I think the same thing is going to happen.
Well, I heard that, well, this is just some dumb vegans I saw online, but they're requesting that, like, the meat aisle in a grocery store change to just a protein aisle. Like, it's not like the butcher section, it's just the protein section. So, I guess so they can have, like, you know, whatever tofu there, and it's all in the same category.
Well, I already get upset when I'm looking at, like, frozen burgers. I see, like, Impossible Burgers right next to Real Burgers. Like, I know that shit. I'm smart enough to know that.
Yeah.
But they look the same. The label's basically the same. It looks like meat. Yeah. Like, how many people are getting tricked into buying this fake meat?
I'm sure a lot of people are.
Yeah, I mean, that's so deceiving. I hate that.
Yeah, because on the label it says, I don't know, 30% less cholesterol, 30% less salt. You know, they have all those tag words that just the layman sees that and they go, oh, they associate that with health.
They should honestly not be able to put the word meat on their label if it's not meat.
I agree. Yeah. That's what we should be fighting for.
Yeah. And with the guidelines, I mean, this wasn't on the documentary either, but it doesn't look too good. Like, we're going to get the whole low-carb movement or the whole... Like, it seems like the whole board that's determining this is loaded with vegans on one side.
Yeah, pro-vegetable people. It is. Yeah.
So it's not looking good for us.
That's where the money is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we talked about a few weeks back, we had a Q&A podcast. I talked about James Cameron, the movie. What's the movie called? Do you remember?
Game Changers.
Game Changer. So they talk about, you know, vegan athletes and this bullshit. And, of course, James Cameron wants to promote a vegan diet because he owns a pea protein company. Guess what they make those ultimate, I mean, what do you call Beyond Burgers from? Pea protein. People in this industry, they're, honestly, let me tell you who they are. They're a bunch of old white guys looking to make money off your ass. That's what it is. People are making money off people turning vegan. And that's sad.
It's cheap food that they can make so much out of it. So, like, the margins are so high.
Yep.
And they're stripping our planet. Like, we shouldn't get into this
anymore. Oh, yeah, talk about monocrops.
Well, I think we're going to get into this next week, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. And I'm going to pick apart vegans piece by piece.
So, yeah, the key takeaways of the documentary is basically it's up to you to get your health in order. Don't wait for your doctors, the food industry, or the government to change, because most likely they're not going to. And don't just wait till tomorrow. You should start today to think about your health.
Yep. No one's going to do it for you. Do it yourself, man. You can do it. You really can. So, I don't know. Overall, I thought the movie was good. A little boring for me, but I think for the average person out there, if you're just interested in... like, just the history of the guidelines, like I said, and why people think fat's bad, why people think, you know, meat's bad. Just watch the movie. The people who are giving the information, like the doctors and scientists, I don't think they did a good job highlighting their credentials. Because trust me, those people giving those, like, just a quick little information, they're studs. I'm talking, like, the smartest people on the planet are giving you information. So, all vouch for everybody in that movie.
Yeah, it's really crazy. It's like the first time I ever heard Ivor Cummings do a talk, I was like, I need to know more about this guy and more about his research.
Very impressive.
And he was talked for maybe 2 minutes in the documentary and did not come across that way at all.
I know. It was sad.
Yeah, I had to tell my fiance, like, while we were watching, I was like, you see, like, Feldman and Ivor Cummings, the Irish guy? Or, he's Irish. Yeah,
he's Irish, Irish, yeah.
I was like, you see those two guys? Those guys know more about cholesterol than anybody else on this planet.
On the planet. That's the truth. Yeah.
And she was like, really? So, like, they didn't really come across that way. I'm like, I know.
That sucked.
I was disappointed.
Yeah, they should have had, like a sizzle reel of, like, the papers they've done. Or even just, like, a quick highlight of, like, why you should listen to what this dude's saying.
Yeah.
Think we covered it pretty good?
Yeah, I think we broke it down pretty well. I mean, overall, it's a good documentary. Recommend it.
Yeah, I recommend it. Listen to it. I mean, everything they say is right. You know, I didn't find anything where I was like, that's wrong.
Yeah, I don't think I disagreed with anything that they mentioned either.
Yeah, me either. So I vouch for everything they're saying. And I mean, like, I know I don't know everything, but at least my opinion is informed.
Yeah, definitely.
So do you have a tip of the week this week?
Yeah, so it kind of goes along with that whole start today and take control of your own health message that comes from that documentary. And this one's about, like, closing your loopholes. So what I mean by loopholes are... basically, like, hey, I worked out hard today, so I, you know, it's okay if I eat some ice cream. Or, you know, like, I've been kind of, like, my diet doesn't matter what I eat today, because on Monday, I'm going to be super strict. Or another one is, like, you know what, I'm going to run tomorrow, so I can just be lazy and lounge on the couch today. Just something like that, where you're trying to find some sort of, like, loophole in your thinking. Of, like,
yeah, a way out.
Yeah, you're looking for shortcuts to take. Hey, I'm going to do this tomorrow. Well, guess what? Tomorrow's going to have its own obstacles, and maybe you're not going to be doing that stuff tomorrow. So why put it at risk? So, like, one that I do quite often is that one that I mentioned earlier. Is like, hey, after my long runs, I used to eat ice cream. You know why? Because I deserved it. I just ran 20 miles in the hot sun. I deserve that ice cream. But it's like, why? It's not doing me any benefits. No. It's not doing any good for me. So it's like, why is that in my rationale? Like, hey, I just busted my ass. I should be putting food in my body that's going to help me adapt to that run. It's going to help me grow. It's going to help me faster. It's going to help me recover. Like, that's the stuff that you really should be thinking about. And one thing I do love about the carnivore diet is it pretty much eliminates those loopholes for you. Because, like, you can eat chocolate. Doesn't really matter as long as you eat just a tiny amount on a ketogenic diet. But chocolate's not carnivore. So there is no loophole of being able to fit in, like, a Snickers bar on a carnivore diet. Like, that's one of my favorite things about it.
Yeah, no, that's such a great point. Yeah, like, if you wanted to stay, like, say you're on a keto diet, but you wanted, say, I don't know, what are those little hard candies called? They're like, colorful.
Like a Jawbreaker, Skittles, M&M's?
No, Jolly Rancher.
Jolly Rancher, okay.
Okay, how many grams of sugar in a Jolly Rancher, you think? Maybe 5?
You know, I honestly, probably 5 to 10.
Yeah, 5 to 10. So if you wanted to be on a ketogenic diet, and say you could have maybe 2 or 3 Skittles, fuck Skittles, Jolly Ranchers, and technically still be keto. Right, it wouldn't kick you out of ketosis if you say you have 1,000 grams of fat that day. You know what I'm saying? Like, you would still be in ketosis, but it's not carnivore. It's not from an animal product, so you can't have it. So it is a great way to cut out those escape routes people have.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to go like full carnivore to eliminate those loopholes, but you just need to be aware of the ones that you're making in your life. And once you're aware of them, then you can start changing them. Like, that's that first step, is just like realize, oh, hey, it's Friday night. It's okay if I eat shitty, because on Monday I'm going to get back at it. Like, that's the wrong mentality. That's just, you know, you're going to just maintain or get worse instead of putting in all this hard work and getting the benefits of it.
Exactly. No, it's great. That's a great way to think. Yeah, it's a great tip of the week. All right, well, that's another podcast in the books. Thank you for listening. You can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, please rate and review our podcast and, you know, share with a friend. You can find us on YouTube, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Apple Podcasts. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.